From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the state of measles.
Thus now, as it has for centuries past, measles takes its toll of human life.
And while some say each generation repeats the mistakes of the last, no generation in America should suffer the plagues of the past.
And I have a feeling that we're going to see spread for quite a while. This is something we're going to be dealing with for quite a while.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. As the West Texas measles outbreak continues to spread and we report on the latest developments, we frequently include that this is the worst measles outbreak in more than 30 years. Well, what happened 30 years ago with measles and how bad was it? And how did public health officials back then beat the outbreak? I decided to take a look. To be precise, it was 36 years ago that Texas and the nation faced a historic measles outbreak. It lasted from 1989 to 1991.
It was a really scary time.
Dr. Julie Morrow, a pediatrician at Fort Worth Cook Children's Hospital at the time and now, remembers what that outbreak was like.
And we started seeing measles cases in 1989. The outbreak in Texas actually started in the Houston area and spread throughout the state in a matter of months. We started seeing cases in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Our patients that were affected were mostly younger children and several children that were younger than the age that had been vaccinated. So that is the group that's under 12 months of age. So we started seeing cases. Those children were coming in. We were having to do lots of, kind of similar to what we had to do during COVID. We had to use lots of protective equipment because the contagiousness of measles is so incredibly high.
Morrow said children were being brought to the hospital with that painful red rash covering their entire bodies, including their scalps, and high fevers, some as high as 105.
It was a tough time. It was a very concerning time. It was concerning for us. We were trying to manage the, taking care of patients in the office, plus taking care of these children in the hospital. There was, lots of calls, lots of questions.
1989 to 1991 saw one of the worst measles outbreaks in the nation since the vaccine was introduced in the mid-1960s. During that time, there were over 55,000 reported national measles cases and 123 measles-related deaths. In Texas alone, 10 deaths were reported in 1989. The next year, the toll was 12 deaths. This is according to Dr. David Smith, the Texas Health Commissioner at that time.
It seems like we're doing that again.
Dr. Adam Ratner, author of Booster Shots, The Urgent Lessons of Measles and the Uncertain Future of Children's Health, said the problem was President Ronald Reagan's budget cuts, particularly to President Carter's immunization programs.
Those were rolled back under Reagan, and what we saw was sadly predictable, which was a drop in vaccination rates, and then this huge multi-city, multi-state outbreak in 89, really through 91. Chicago got hit particularly badly, Houston as well. And there were multiple deaths, mostly in unvaccinated children.
President George H.W. Bush restored that funding in 1982.
As with immunization, this only hurt a little.
Here he is in the Rose Garden announcing the restoration of that funding.
When we announced our national education goals, the very first was that by the year 2000, all children in America will start school ready to learn. And that's one reason we put such emphasis on our Healthy Start initiative. Every child deserves a chance. And in the 1990s, no child in America should be at risk to deadly diseases like diphtheria, polio, or the measles. A decade ago, we hoped to eradicate these threats.
Using the presidential bully pulpit, Bush called on parents to get their children immunized, and he didn't mince words.
Today, I call on every parent everywhere in America. Don't take a chance. The facilities are there. the vaccines are available. Call your local public health official or your own physician. Please make sure your child is immunized. A deadly plague called polio threatened my generation, darkened the fun of summers and crippled and killed kids. But American ingenuity, fantastic research, stopped that killer. And while some say each generation repeats the mistakes of the last, no generation in America should suffer the plagues of the past. American decency demands that we not let complacency lead to contagion and never let apathy lead to epidemic.
I'm going to highlight a point here. Bush said generations should not repeat the mistakes of the past, but Ratner says he sees that mistake happening again, the same mistake that Ronald Reagan made, cutting funding to vaccines for budgetary purposes. It's happening again now with Trump's cuts to the CDC's vaccination programs.
There is probably no more effective public health program. And the idea that you would cut that, it is such a bargain in terms of, you know, reducing unnecessary medical costs and saving lives of children. And it makes no sense. It makes no sense from a financial point of view. Like, the amount that you would ostensibly save by cutting VFC is more than offset by the amount of money that you save in preventing hospitalizations and deaths. So that has got to be a just politically motivated and vindictive move that doesn't make any sense.
During the 1990 measles outbreak, there was a congressional hearing looking for answers as to how the virus was allowed to spread unchecked.
Coming up next, we bring you live coverage of a hearing held to investigate the nationwide measles epidemic. Chairing the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee on Health and Environment is Congressman Henry Waxman.
Measles was once thought to be an inevitable childhood disease, but in 4 years, it was shown to be 100% preventable. Over the past years of tight budgets, however, the immunization programs have been eroded. When money was limited, it was spent to buy the vaccines, but the workers to find unimmunized children were moved to other jobs or dismissed. Fewer and fewer people were left to reach unvaccinated children. The result has been predictable. After years of work and then years of erosion, there were almost 25,000 cases of measles in 1990, virtually where we began. The problem is clear to see. Vaccination programs are limited. Clinics are inaccessible. Public awareness is also low. Many parents are waiting until their child is ready for school, even though the biggest danger is to infants. And sadly, some parents are complacent. They mistakenly think that measles is only a rash and a few days in bed, when in fact it's a dangerous disease.
The hardest hit areas were inner city low-income communities, but the exception was San Antonio. The city's vaccination success was noted, and in that 1992 congressional hearing, Representative Henry Waxman asked the city's director of public health, Dr. Fernando Guerra, how he did it.
The Committee on Measles that was brought together by the National Vaccine Advisory Committee served the purpose of calling attention to a healthcare system that is in some state of disarray and that is not so user-friendly as it has perhaps contributed in one way or another to an emerging measles epidemic in this country over the last 2 years. I would initially state that the measles outbreak is a sentinel event, again, for a system that has not always been so responsive to the needs of its communities.
Can you tell us why the program in San Antonio has been successful, since the problems in San Antonio are so close to the problems of other areas of the country where we've lagged behind in getting children immunized for measles?
We have tried, through the shared responsibilities in both the public and the private sector and the delivery healthcare system, to keep immunization as a concern for the entire community. It is something that is day after day and month after month and year after year, something that we try to keep out in front of the community as a shared responsibility, and one that maintains a state of awareness across all sectors.
Dr. Guetta explained that San Antonio consistently worked with the city's hard-to-reach households and made vaccinations available wherever and whenever they could.
At times, even do door-to-door campaigns in some of the housing projects where we have observed that the immunization rates are quite low. We use the media quite often to put out a variety of messages, try to make them as culturally sensitive and relevant to all sectors of the community. We try to have extended hours of immunization services, including evenings and weekends.
Dr. Guetta's relentless approach became the national model, and within a decade, measles was declared eliminated from the United States.
I can't believe that we're doing this again.
Dr. Morrow says she sees this outbreak of 1990 playing out again in Texas.
And I have a feeling we are in the same situation again. Some folks are really heeding the warnings and some folks are really not. And I have a feeling that we are going to see spread for quite a while. This is something we're going to be dealing with for quite a while.
The data predicts that we will be dealing with measles for quite a while, and it's going to get much worse before it gets better, unless vaccination rates start to improve, which is unlikely given that under President Trump and his appointed Secretary of Health and Human Services, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., they are defunding vaccination programs and spreading disinformation about vaccines and the seriousness of the measles outbreak. This week, Kennedy was in College Station, Texas, and again, he downplayed the Texas measles outbreak, and he disparaged the news media for covering the outbreak.
And one of the things that I've tried to get the press to focus on is that we have a chronic disease epidemic at the same time. We have 100,000 autism cases diagnosed every year. We have now 38% of our children are diabetic or pre-diabetic. When I was a kid, there was virtually no diabetes among children. And we should be giving headlines to that because those are much more devastating epidemics.
Yes, there's no denying that there is a public health crisis with childhood diabetes. But downplaying an infectious disease outbreak like measles that is easily prevented with a low-cost, safe, and reliable vaccine does nothing to address that problem of the explosion of early-onset type 2 diabetes. But Kennedy goes on and spreads disinformation about measles.
We're doing everything that we can, not only with those populations like the Mennonites in Gaines County, and I've been to Gaines County. I attended a funeral down there of one of the little girls who died not of measles, but she had had measles.
Kennedy, who has a long and documented history of denying that measles is a fatal disease, he said the two girls in Gaines County did not die from measles. He said they had measles when they died. This follows a narrative pushed by anti-vaccine advocates. But medical authorities confirmed that the two school-aged children in West Texas who died from measles did indeed die from direct result of the measles virus. The Texas Department of State Health Services reported that both children were unvaccinated and had no known underlying medical conditions. The second death specifically cited measles pulmonary failure as the cause. And the Center for Disease Control and Prevention also reports these deaths as being caused by measles. Then Kennedy goes on to promote unproven and dangerous medical treatments for measles.
Those, they have religious objections to vaccination, and we need to be able to treat them even though they're not vaccinated. There are many, many good ways to treat measles, and doctors need to know that and to know those methods. And we are developing now a worksheet for doctors to address the epidemic, to address people who have it, not just with vaccination, but actually with budesonide, with clarithromycin, with vitamin A, and many, many other treatments that have been shown very effective.
Hospitals in West Texas have reported overdose levels of vitamin A in children, which is causing liver damage. Kennedy didn't say anything about the one thing that is proven to stop the spread of measles, the MMR vaccine. And unless vaccination levels improve in the United States, not only will the measles outbreak continue, it will get worse and become endemic. Measles was officially eliminated in the U.S. in the year 2000, but research published this week using modeling to forecast the future of measles in America found that the United States could see millions of new measles cases over the next 25 years if vaccination rates continue to fall. If vaccine rates hold steady at today's level, researchers predict just under a million cases of measles over the next 25 years and over 2,500 deaths. The study was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Kate Bubar was one of the study's authors.
So for our study, we were focused on four examples: measles, rubella, diphtheria, and polio. While we were interested in estimating both the total number of infections that we can expect over the next 20 years, as well as infection-related consequences. And the key part of our study that we were really interested in as well is what can we expect for endemic transmission? And kind of the main takeaway is that under current levels of vaccination, in the majority of simulations that we ran, we found measles would be endemic in about 20 years in the United States.
We're seeing measles now spreading in Texas quite a bit and also in other parts of the country. The concern is that it's going to be very difficult to rein in the outbreak that we have now. I mean, and it's likely that we're not going to be able to claim that measles has been eliminated from the United States a year from now, are we?
Yeah. So your question is really getting at kind of the definition of what does endemic really mean. And I would say that there are a lot of different ways we could think about defining endemic, really. And there's differences because there's different expectations depending on the pathogen, how it transmits, and really what is the purpose of defining something as endemic versus eliminated. And so the definition that we used in our paper was a pretty kind of high bar for actually reaching that endemic level. And our definition is working under kind of the assumption that measles would be commonplace and that sort of everyone would know somebody who has had measles. Getting to a point of a lot of measles cases. That's around 100,000 cases of measles per year. And there's a lot stricter definitions that you could use that would lead to coming to that conclusion within, say, 1 to 5 years.
So you're looking at this at the current vaccination levels that it would be endemic in 25 years?
Yeah, like 20 years. Yes.
Okay. And so, but what if the levels continue to fall, vaccination levels drop off still?
Right. So we looked at that specifically in the paper. Say measles vaccine coverage fell by 10% across the country, then that time to when measles would be endemic falls closer to 10 years on average. And we see even like steeper effects if vaccine coverage drops even further.
Right. So if vaccine levels were to fall, then we would actually see an exponential sort of growth of measles, wouldn't we?
Yes, definitely.
I can try and imagine the relationship because it would be much easier for the virus to whip through a population.
Yeah, exactly. So I think maybe a different example for like a different definition you could use for endemic, what the WHO uses is continuous transmission for a year. And if we had considered that sort of definition, then that's where, I mean, we could be at risk of losing our elimination status within this year, just from the current ongoing outbreak as it is. So that's where the definition we used in the paper was kind of a very different framing. And we were really interested in like, when is it going to be extremely commonplace in the U.S.?
You're not just looking at measles, you're also looking at the big baddie, which is polio, which is hard to imagine that could become something that we have to worry about again. What are y'all's conclusions?
Measles is really kind of considered like the canary in the coal mine when we're thinking about these reemerging infectious diseases because it is so infectious. And then kind of the other pathogens that we considered, so also rubella and diphtheria, as well as polio, they're ones that we would not expect endemic transmission unless we see kind of severe drops in vaccine coverage. That's not surprising, but it is important to keep in mind when there are so many questions of vaccine hesitation and potential changes to vaccine recommendations and everything. But with current levels of vaccine coverage, we would not expect really many cases at all.
That polio would not become the problem if, as long as people get vaccinated. But I'm hearing the term that measles is a sentinel indicator of a troubled public health system. The fact that we're having, you know, because it's so contagious, and that we're able to see that the public health system is being frayed, and vaccinations are not at the level where they should be. So the concern is we're seeing in real time that we have a problem.
I agree.
Looking at it from another point of view is like, okay, well, the population sees, this is, you know, we have people getting measles. It's really bad. The numbers are really high. Let's start getting vaccinated again. And there is the elastic response. Okay, people start getting vaccinated again. Is that going to be enough to end an endemic status for measles?
I think it's all going to depend about kind of the timing of when would that coverage increase exactly in comparison to, you know, how widespread is measles at the moment. But vaccination is our best tool to keep measles from becoming endemic. We found that if vaccination rates increased nationally by 5% for measles, we would not expect the endemic transmission within 20 years. We found no endemic transmission in that scenario when we ran that with our model.
Kate Bubar is an infectious disease expert at Stanford University. She's a co-author of the report Modeling Reemergence of Vaccine-Eliminated Infectious Diseases Under Declining Vaccination in the United States. So, unless vaccination rates increase, we could be going back to a time when measles was common. Well, what was that like? The measles vaccine was first made available in 1963, and it was welcomed and celebrated as a modern medical miracle that saved countless lives. But up until then, measles was a scourge, as we hear in this educational film from that era.
Many parents think of measles as just a common nuisance, which makes their children feel miserable and keeps them out of school for a while. But physicians today know that measles is more than a nuisance. It can bring on bacterial infections, can cause fatal pneumonia, and in some cases, encephalitis, inflammation of the brain. Each case needs good medical care. It is not so much because of the usual rash and fever symptoms of measles that the doctor says he'll check back in a day or so, but rather to be sure the young patient is not developing serious complications. As of this time, measles is by far our most serious epidemic childhood disease. Although nearly 500,000 cases are reported each year, the actual number is probably closer to 4 million. In 1961, after the polio vaccines had reduced the deaths from that disease to 90, that same year, 434 measles deaths were reported. Thus now, as it has for centuries past, measles takes its toll of human life.
Even though measles was seen as routine, it did terrify many parents, especially those who had seen siblings or neighbors die or suffer from permanent disabilities. Once the vaccine was available, an aggressive public awareness campaign was launched. Here's a public service announcement promoting measles immunization with the iconic NBA player Jerry West.
This is Jerry West reminding you that measles is no longer considered a harmless childhood disease. Measles kill about 500 youngsters each year. In one of every six cases, it can produce some physical or mental defect, and consequently thousands of children are crippled. Since the introduction of measles vaccine in 1963, the incidence of measles has decreased considerably. However, there are still many children throughout the nation susceptible to these diseases. Why face the possible adverse effects of measles? Join the End Measles campaign. Have your children immunized today.
And into the 1970s, the state of Texas Health Department produced and aired its own PSAs urging vaccinations.
There's no doubt about it. Mama used to be hard on the kids. In the old days, she'd drag Johnny off to a neighbor's house to spend the day with a friend who had the measles. That way, Johnny would get 'em and get it over with.
Unfortunately, Mama was also exposing Johnny to more than just little red spots. Sometimes Johnny had complications more serious than the measles itself. Even so, no one could accuse Mama of not doing her duty. But today, Mama has learned that Johnny doesn't even have to get measles. We have a vaccine to prevent it. Isn't that nice? Protect the Johnny in your life from measles. Have him immunized.
On February 11th, on the floor of the Texas House of Representatives, the organization Texans for Vaccine Choice was given a special recognition.
This afternoon, I have the distinct pleasure to honor, welcome, and celebrate Texans for Vaccine Choice on 10 years of advocacy.
Republican Representative Mitch Little of East Texas District 65 led the celebration of the Anti-Vaccine Political Action Committee.
Texans for Vaccine Choice is now a widely recognized organization. Please join me in congratulating them on their 10 years of service.
I try not to think too much about Texans for Vaccine Choice. What I think about are the lawmakers who are being bamboozled by them.
Terry Burke heads the Immunization Partnership, a Houston-based pro-vaccine advocacy group. Burke says Texans for Vaccine Choice has become influential in the halls of the Texas Capitol with the agenda to end all vaccine requirements in the state.
They rally a small, very vocal minority of people, and that looks powerful, it looks large, and it causes lawmakers to be fearful.
Over several weeks, I have reached out to Texans for Vaccine Choice multiple times for comment for the story. They have never responded, but in other interviews, the group has denied being anti-vaccine. However, on their website, they host a podcast called The Shot Caller and recently platformed and agreed with Dr. Mark Bailey. He says vaccines do not work and viruses are not real.
Whole issue of viruses and so-called germs and pathogens is not really that controversial. It's pretty straightforward, and it's just a matter of showing people that there's no evidence for these things, and there never was.
Bailey's views on virology, particularly his assertion that viruses do not exist, are widely rejected by the scientific and medical communities. His work contradicts decades of established research in microbiology, infectious disease, and epidemiology.
It is a concerning moment. I'm Dr. Suleiman Lalani, and I proudly represent Texas House District 76.
Lalani says he's worried about how the science that can prevent the spread of measles and other viruses is being ignored because of politics.
Any legislation that would weaken the vaccine requirements will increase the chances of preventable disease outbreaks, and that's to happen. So I'm very much concerned.
There are at least 20 bills filed in the current legislative session that Texans for Vaccine Choice is supporting. Many would make it easier to get a vaccine exemption. Lalani says he will be working with his fellow lawmakers to try to prevent those bills from becoming law. But SMU political science professor Cal Jolson says Texans for Vaccine Choice has a lot of political power because they can help decide winners and losers in the state's Republican primary.
So the Republican majority in the Texas legislature is very sensitive to relatively small groups of voters.
But Jolson says with a raging outbreak of measles in Texas, the lawmakers could be reconsidering their support for weakening vaccine requirements. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. You can find Texas Matters wherever you download cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.